Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Captain's log.
According to reports from the Minnesota DNR, we are waist deep in a lake infested with...
Captain, the ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineering, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I got no power. The milfoil is infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes. And the zebra mussels help block out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
And welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody's having a pleasant evening, afternoon, or morning, wherever you may be situated on our planet. For my American listeners, I hope y'all had a great 4th of July yesterday. We just hung out, barbecued, and took it easy, basically. But the space shuttle. Now, guys, I'm really thinking the government set us up on this one, okay? This was like, let's see, we launched the shuttle, which is probably the biggest firework you could let loose at one time on the 4th of July. I thought it was cool that the shuttle's first flight back since that disaster was on the 4th of July. Kind of coincidental and kind of funny, but still, it's one of the things. While we're on this subject, I know we've discussed this on past shows about the different things going on, but when it comes to the shuttle, really, I've been getting everybody to write into me and stuff, and I'm really curious how many of y'all think this is a waste of time. Should we just be go ahead and use the Russians' craft to get in space? It's about a third of the price to get there, by the way. I'm just thinking if this is the way we should be doing this, and maybe we should be using this money to help speed up the program for the moon and Mars, because honestly, this 2020 goal for the moon and this now looking like 2040 for Mars is really hacking me off, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I'm 43. I don't know if I'm going to make it to 80. I'd like to see something before I kicked over and, went to the creator. It's just one of the things that makes me crazy. You know, there's a lot of good things in the space program right now. There's a lot of private industry getting involved, a lot of different companies. Bill Gates is even putting in a little money. You know, his buddy Paul already has been putting in money. A couple of bigger other companies, I forgot who it was that bought out U.S. Deal, but they're going to put up some money, and Halliburton's getting involved and putting up some money. So it does look like this is going to become a privatized thing, which is a big plus, because we'll definitely get there fast and cheap when it becomes privatized, and they'll always be looking to get there faster and faster because, you got to keep schedule, keep the profit going. So that's one of the things that we're looking forward to in the future. I've seen some of the new designs for some of the asteroid belt, the mining equipment they want to put out there. The asteroid belt itself is going to be totally automated. It'll land on a mine, it'll start doing its thing, and there's six or seven versions of these that can just land on core, drill, and extract minerals and ore and stuff. Also, but on Mars itself, they want to put up a refining center. In other words, they want to refine the all of our chemicals, all the raw minerals and ores there. Actually, it's for two reasons. One, One is that the thing of it is one of the reasons why is, of course, all the pollutants will stay on Mars. But by doing so, it also helps to heat up the Martian atmosphere. They want to build several of these things on Mars so they can start just burning, you know, all the chemicals off from the mining in the asteroid, you know, field. Also, they want to start putting these dirt collectors together just to burn dirt to put carbon in the air, just to heat the planet and bring the pressure up. Not to change the atmosphere, mind you, to breathable, just so that you could walk around on the surface of Mars without a spacesuit. You'll still have to have an oxygen mask, but you won't need a spacesuit. That is one of their goals. So, I mean, these are all lofty goals, and I think there's a lot of these are all achievable. It's just I don't understand why things move so slow. I just don't understand why they move so slow. It's one of those things that makes me crazy beyond belief. Now, a friend of mine is going to be calling in. He's also a regional director for the Belgium-speaking countries, I should say, Norwegian. But he's handling that whole area for me these days. He's going to be coming on with some exclusive sighting reports out of that area, so that should be interesting in itself. His name's John Cool. He's also founder of Untold Mysteries. He'll be stopping by to give us an update on that. I wanted to bring that up to you. Also, Melinda Leslie is going to be with us tonight. Y'all know I love Melinda. She's great. She always does a fantastic job when she's on the show. She's bringing on a friend, Randy Coping. So this should be an interesting show. He's got a new book out. We're going to check all this out, see what we can get into. Yeah, I know. I put my foot in my mouth. Thank you very much. But I do that every once in a while. The disadvantages of doing live radio sometimes. Well, it's just interesting the way all of this works out. I mean, as an organization, ICAR is growing by leaps and bounds, inside and outside of the ufology community, which is nice. We have lots of friends in Europe these days. We have lots of, yes, thank you very much. We have lots of friends in Australia. We even have a lot of friends in China these days. Russia, we're making friends in Russia, you know. Slowly but surely, we're making friends there. Slow to go, but, you know, it's moving along. One more thing, and I know John will be calling in pretty soon, but one more thing I wanted to talk about right quick when it comes to some of this new exploration we have on mind. The thing about it is oh, Melinda, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Melinda, what you doing, sweetie? Oh, I was just talking to the audience. I was waiting for somebody else to call in, but, ladies and gentlemen, Melinda Leslie. Randy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Randy, pronounce your last name for me, because I'm going to butcher it, so go ahead and pronounce it for me.
My last name? Copank.
Oh, I had it right. I don't believe it. Oh, well, I'm in shock, Copank. I actually had it right for
you. You intuited. Most people don't.
Hey, I'm bad with last names, and I got a hard one myself, so I'm not, you know, it's just one of those things.
So, real quick, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Are you?
Yeah.
Jeff, can you clean that up? How about now? You hear me any better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
Okay, maybe if I put the mic in front of my mouth, it'll help, ladies and gentlemen. That just helps it. Before I get y'all started, I got a...
I heard, though.
Can you hear me okay? Melinda?
Yeah, okay. Not great, though.
Okay. We'll get that in a second. But before I get you and Randy started, I got a friend of mine who's calling in from the Netherlands. He's bringing us a sightings update, some exclusive stuff that's been going on over there. So I'm going to let him do that, and then we're going to go ahead and bring y'all into the show, and then we'll start from there. So, John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, John Cool. John, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell them what you're doing.
Yes.
And go ahead.
I will do. My name is John Kulis from the Netherlands, and I'm the, because you said Belgium-speaking people, but some Dutch-speaking people in Netherlands and Belgium. So I'm the regional European director for Dutch-speaking countries, and I'm happy that you... you know, allow me to be a part of ICAR. And I said, yes, I have a very exclusive for this radio station. What happened is that in the northwest of the Netherlands, there's a massive sightings going on from the 3rd June and the 1st July. I've been investigating UFOs for 16 years and been very heavily involved, having this web page, untoldmysteries.com, for those who want to see the latest news on this massive sightings. What is important is that they were seen by over 100 people on about 10 different cities in 100 square kilometers. So it is a huge area that has been seen. And we talk about six, they call it light bulbs, and but they were very big, bigger than what you expect from a light, what you see, this flame, this balloon, hot balloon, that they, you know, what you Thailand and what you see in the Asian countries. You have this fact that they leave, you know, you see the small lights. That is something else. So what is being filmed by two people, independent people, and what I just received from email, the confirmation of a woman that was one of the 100 eyewitnesses, when she was outside, and it was very late at night, so we don't talk about a sun that is reflecting on a weather balloon, because if you have, you know, if you have 8 p.m. or 10 p.m., then it could be very well that the sun is reflecting orange color in a weather balloon, but this is not the case. We talk about really deep in the night. And also it's important, there was a clear night sky, there was no wind. That's also extremely important that people know, there is no wind whatsoever. So they saw the six orange objects in a straight line, in a horizontal way. And there were, again, no wind. So, and they looked like plasma balls. That's what they described and what they saw. And there's only one person that described it must be something like a flame, but that is kind of strange. If 99 people saying it's not, then this is maybe a disinformant, like somebody is spreading disinformation. But the majority that I've investigated myself, because the local and the national TV stations called me up to give me a comment about what I know about this those people. And they said, okay, I need to do some research, and I did that. I spoke over 20 people, including the one who did the filming, and I just received this, using a mobile phone cam. It's a second cam, and it's never been shown to the public yet, and it confirmed that these are plasma UFOs. They're not flames, but people think that there are some skeptics who think that there are hot air, the small hot air explanation. So that's on my website. You can actually see an animation of this, this so-called explanation, what the skeptics think that they are. So I did some effort to show the public the difference between this this so-called skeptics explanation. And I've been on national television and on regional television in the northwest of province of the Netherlands. And more and more scientists coming in, by the way, because of this media attention. I get a lot of extra responses, but I have to check them out yet. So I think over 40 extra reports that I have to check out for myself. So we talk about 140 eyewitnesses.
Dang, John, I'll tell you what, that ought to keep you busy where you know where, man, so you can always come report them. Also here, ladies and gentlemen, in a few weeks, John and I, probably towards the later part of August, we'll be doing, we have the ability to do media now along with the radio show. We can do streaming video and audio and pictures and stuff like that. Jaime Masson will also be coming on the show as well. But anyway, starting here in about 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I think, maybe six, we're putting together a little PowerPoint presentation along with some video clips and some pictures so that y'all, the people in the virtual auditorium, and anyone listening outside on the radio side can actually join one of the virtual auditoriums, sit and review
Joe,
the photos for yourself.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, John.
I just want to say that people want to see the exclusive footages of those orange orbs. You can actually click on the mass UFO sightings on the front page of Untold Mysteries, with a T, untoldmysteries.com. You can actually click on it and see the video footage for yourself.
Okay, John. Well, again, I want to thank you for coming on. Also, Jeff just informed me that we'll have the full motion video in both auditoriums, so that's actually quite nice to know. So you'll actually be being able to join either one of the auditoriums, sit and watch the video as you're listening to the radio show. It's something different we're doing. It's not something we're going to do on every radio show, but we will be doing quite a few of them towards the last part of this year. Actually, we have several of them that we're going to be doing scheduled. John's will be the first one, and we'll be doing this. It should be very interesting to see how this works out, too, ladies and gentlemen, because you have the live radio aspect, and you will be able to still come in and interact with the guests like you've always been able to. The only difference is now there'll be video or photographs to go along with it. I'm just encouraging everybody to know about it so that way they can be in the virtual auditoriums, because that's where it will be available. But again, John, let me tell you, thank you. I know I got Randy and Melinda waiting for me, so I can't be hogging up all their time. Randy, Melinda, how have y'all been doing? Both of y'all.
Fine.
Doing good.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate that.
Well, no,
we've been looking forward to it.
Well, Melinda spoke highly about you, and I like Melinda, and she don't speak highly about that many people in the, by the way. I'm just kidding, y'all. No, for the people I do know, we have ufologists listening. She's not talking bad about y'all. Okay, I don't want to start no wars. Randy, let me do this. Let me get you to tell a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in this, and then we'll let Melinda go, and then we'll start from there.
Well, apparently, the relationship that gave birth to this opportunity is that after having known Melinda for quite a while, we, you know, in short incremental steps over, well, I don't know, I think I've known Melinda maybe 10 years or more. And little by little, we actually developed a closer, kind of like working relationship, and now I'm very glad to say that we are collaborators on a certain perspective and what I call a subset of the greater abductee phenomena part of ufology at large. As you know, that there's many categories of information in ufology, and the abduction phenomena itself is very controversial, of course, because you don't, like the guy from the Netherlands is now reporting on sightings, you know, you don't get sightings when you want sightings. You don't get contact when you want contact. And so it's very unpredictable, and therefore it's always left the people in the audience or the people at large in society with feelings of ambiguity and doubt as to whether or not this is credible. But what Melinda and I realized was, as over time, that she, based on her own personal experience and then meeting many other ET slash abductees, that they had this other experience. And so we decided to collaborate our combined thinking towards the determination, or we can finally concluded that actually if you really did want to further the research beyond that which it has achieved thus far about abductions, then the best way to go about it would to go into it in terms of what other people, other than people in ufology, that is, other people are doing in response to the basic phenomena, because many abductees, as you, in fact, I've never spoken to you before, but I understand that you're very well aware of this, that quite a few abductees claim to have kind of like interventions into their lives by humans. Humans doing something, humans representing themselves and perhaps some organization or some sort. Who they are and what they're really up to, we don't know, but we do know that they're humans, and you can follow and track what humans do. And so we figure that that's a preferable approach at this time, as to both verifying whatever those people are doing and verifying the possibility of verifying abductions generally.
Well, you know, this is one of my, well, I am an abduction investigator, and actually mm-hmm. meeting Melinda was a kind of a godsend, because she was into a part of it that we had been into, but we couldn't spend as much time as we would like, because we have ongoing cases, quite a few of them these days. So it keeps us really, really, really busy. So when she got to talking to me about you a few weeks back, I'm like, well, this is really good, because, see, this helps me out in ways, because I can see what y'all have been doing, and then it helps me as I'm moving along with these other contact cases. But before I get into this, let's let Melinda introduce herself, because we don't want to forget about it. She's being all
right.
Hi, Randy. Hi, Joe. I'm so glad to be here. Oh, goodness. Well, the Reader's Digest condensed version is I've been aware of being an experiencer for, oh, goodness, something like 18 years now. A couple years into it, realized, besides having the ET experiences, that I also had these military and covert intelligence human experiences, because of having the ET experiences. And as I realized that, I then met other people with experiences and found out what other researchers had to say about it. And not that I ever set out to be a researcher in the covert intelligence military involvement, but it just kind of happened as a byproduct of first my having experiences and my self-investigating what was going on with me and where did reality begin and end. But then meeting other cases and kind of taking it on, and then having encouragement from other experiencers and other researchers, a predominant person who encouraged me was Carla Turner when she was still alive, and she said, you've got to go forward with this, you know. And anyhow, so now it's, I've been researching this level of involvement for about 15 years, although still being an abduction researcher at the same time, because the two go hand in hand, and an overall UFO researcher and a paranormal researcher. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, Joe. This is a tangent. I don't necessarily want to spend any time talking about it, but I even do a bunch of paranormal investigations with a team, which includes UFO investigations, but also includes ghosts and other phenomena as well.
But, you know, Melinda, it's interesting. I used to do that a long time ago. I actually have. Our car has gotten kind of big these days, so we actually have a group now that we refer paranormal investigations to, because what happened was is they had come to me because they were getting cases that weren't paranormal. They seemed to be alien, and they didn't know what the hell to do with them. So they were like, Joe, I'll tell you all what. I said, what I'll do then. And so we just started kind of working. Well, that took off. Well, then the religious aspect come in, so now we have people that are dealing with that. It's just strange because there's so much, like Randy was saying, there's so many aspects to ufology. And just in abduction research, there's 10, 15 areas you can work in. We kind of all, as researchers, clump a lot of them together. But, you know, I stay away from the sightings. I have people who do sightings, like you heard John Cools on earlier today. He's handling sightings in Europe. There's several people in America who do sightings. So we don't really track sightings. And a lot of stuff like that, we refer to Peter Davenport or to George Filler or to Larry Hatch so that they can track these things so we can get the information back from them. It's just easier that way. It allows me personally to have a lot more free time to deal with what I'm interested in, which is contactees. Now, I know we're real close to this first break, but before we do this, Randy, did you feel like a, how can I say this without sounding weird, did you feel like a strange pull towards Melinda? I'm just curious. I mean, when you first met her, did you feel like, maybe you knew her or you had some kind of, I don't even know how to put this into words, but I'll let you answer. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, no, you have to understand that the way our relationship actually came about was because for 9 years, Melinda was the hostess of a UFO lecture or ET or paranormal lecture series that occurred that she put on once a month. And I think as I recall her saying, she never missed one month in 9 years.
That's right.
And so we met in the context of that, and then we developed, you know, kind of like rapport with a lot of mutual friends, and that kind of was, you know, kind of like evolved from there. I didn't know her. We don't live very near each other, in fact. And so the attractor for me coming into her territory in this context was her putting on these events, and apparently she would still continue putting them on if she hadn't decided that she either had to do that or devote more concentrated attention towards her own investigations, which she intends to write up into a book, where she's been gathering the raw data for that. You know, and it's very time-consuming to do that. One of the reasons, though, persuaded you to invite me on the program is that we have collaborated. I'll call it that. I did the writing, but we collaborated on a book that's not yet published, but should be probably coming out within the next month or so. And it deals with her case as well as a number of other things that we feel are the best evidence available in terms of correlations to be made in terms of the validity of what she was referring to involving human involvement in people that have been contacted by ETs in some way. And like you just said, you know, in ufology there's many categories of pursuit, but I feel that what people need to do at this point in time, that's why I characterize it either, I mean, earlier regarding abduction phenomena, there's been a lot of research into abduction. You apparently are doing it yourself. But up to this point in time, as I doubt that you will disagree, the cases are different, but there's many things about the cases that are the same. And after you hear quite a bit or read quite a few books on this subject, there's really only so far you can go with it because of the unpredictability, because of the paranormal phenomena, and because, in fact, as I'm emphasizing here, there's many qualities or characteristics of the cases that make all the cases the same. They're distinctly different because they're different individuals, of course, but there's many qualities of the phenomena that are repeated, and that's what you see as a pattern amongst abductees. But the thing that sticks out among the greater abductees is this special area. And I don't know what the proportions are. I don't think it's really that many, but when you add up even a few hundred people, you know, throughout the country that have this human intervention quality, that adds up to quite a few. And so that's unique, and we think that should be emphasized especially at this particular time because, you know, I think that there's only so far you can go with what you might call, you know, I mean, tradition isn't the proper word, it hasn't been going on that long, but traditional abduction research can only, you know, give us that much information because of its very nature itself.
Okay, well, let me stop you right there, Randy, and Melinda, we're going to go to break right quick, so I want everyone
okay.
to stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Melinda Leslie and Randy Coben, and we will start taking some questions when we return, so stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beach? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the fact that he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Melinda Leslie and Randy Coben. Before we get back in there, remember, ladies and gentlemen, there is a toll-free number at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Also, if you're outside the U.S. and you'd still like to call us, you can reach us at 319-648-5143. Again, 319-648-5143. Makes it easy to find us. Or, of course, you can always join the PowFolk Virtual Auditorium. You know, Randy, I was listening to what you were saying, and I got to thinking about something, and Melinda and I have talked about this in the past. And I was going through some of my stats lately because we had it at about 1 in 10 contactees were having we'll call it a military abduction for a lack of a better word at this moment. But
yeah.
Really, when I really got into the stats, and I'm because we've got about, you know, on an average day, I'll talk to 50, 60 contactees because of our support groups. But, you know, I started going back through the data I have, and, you know, we've done over 7,000 cases in the last 10 years. But the thing about it is the numbers actually, I was way wrong. It's more like one out of every 100 contactees are having a military experience. And so that kind of threw me for a minute. I knew it was like one out of 10, and I was kind of happy with that number. But when I really sat out and did the math and started going through it, I was kind of like, See, I was just under a bad impression because I had so many people recently coming forward with this experience, with this experiment that I was kind of like, whoa, what's going on? But when I went back through all the numbers and what people have originally reported, I'd have to say it's one out of every 100. So that was kind of disappointing. I guess that's a good thing, being what we're talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the things we are talking about is military abductions, and I'm going to get Randy and Melinda both to give you their take on here in just a second. There's a couple of things. I know Melinda's working on some new stuff that was fascinating when I talked to her. And I know I was talking with Randy. The book should be coming out in a month, so y'all be looking forward to that, and I'm sure they'll tell you what the name of it is and where to find it when I let them on the mic here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But the military abductions is an important thing for a couple of reasons. One, the military is abducting you, and they're abducting you because you're being abducted by extraterrestrials. Now, if the government had cut a deal with E.T. and E.T. had full disclosure with the government, there would be no real reason for them to monitor, watch, and abduct abductees. There just wouldn't be any reason for it. But anyway, we'll let ladies go first. We'll let Melinda give us her take on it, and then Randy, when Melinda's through, you can just come on up and give us your take on it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Melinda.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right. If they had full involvement with the ETs directly, they wouldn't need to necessarily question us about ET motives or question us about ET technology if they were getting all that information. Now, I think there's a couple of different scenarios here, and this is, I always say this is like a big onion with layers you have to peel back. And obviously, those ET individuals that the government or those who are, and I won't say the government, I'll say those who are in the black ops, need to know, compartmentalized areas, who deal with this subject, who do crash retrievals, who do reverse engineering. These very compartmentalized groups who actually know something about this subject and have the technology and have the hardware, they may be interacting with some groups of aliens but not others. So it would make sense that if you're interacting with some, that you may spy on others. If you think of your traditional Cold War scenario, where there may be two foreign groups working together who know information, but yet they're spying on an additional foreign group, you know, that kind of thing. So you have allies as well as enemies in those traditional scenarios. And you have to remember, this is a military mindset, because a lot of people, when I start talking about this, say, oh, you know, are you saying it's all good or bad, or, you know, is it all bad? You know, and we have to get away from that, because if you realize this is in the hands of the military and intelligence community, they have a traditional way of thinking, and that's how they do analysis of problems, and that's how they adjust to those problems and adapt programs to deal with them, and how they budget and how they justify budgets and how they appropriate money and all these things. So you have to say, well, wait a second, if you're taking that mindset, I think it works within the constraints of that. And so just because they may be interacting with one group of aliens doesn't mean they know about other groups, and hence if you're an abductee who's had experiences with other groups, obviously they would want to know what your experience is with those other groups. Now, because that's one major part of what comes up in the research is the alien motives part. But the other part that comes up equally as much, at one time I thought it was more the one and then more the other, and so I think it's about even. The other thing that comes up most consistently also is their interest in technology and what the abductee has had hands-on and what they've seen. Have they flown craft? Have they navigated? Have they operated the technology? Have they been shown the technology? How much information about technology has been downloaded to them by the aliens? This kind of thing. And there's other things, too, like there's genetics and, you know, the whole other, if you think of all the aspects of alien abduction itself and all the layers that are there, all those layers are what these military guys are interested in. So they want to know all those same things that are part of your alien experience. So yes, I think they do have some involvement with some alien groups, but that doesn't mean they have complete involvement, like you were just saying. And obviously they have unanswered questions. And also they may have some involvement, but want to, you know, spy on, if you, you know, put it that way, on those same groups. So even though they have involvement, it's a limited involvement. I don't think there's a lot of trust. I think there's probably a lot of mistrust or distrust. So obviously, they, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they would have interest. Now, you had talked about, and I'll save this for later. I'll let you come back to it, so that way Randy can jump in if he wants, and as well as you, Joe. But you had said about my research taking some new interesting areas, which this gets into. It would take a long explanation, which I'll get into later. But this, what I'm saying right now gets into kind of the new focus I have on my research, which is just kind of a readjustment of the context of understanding it. And it came about because I was actually doing another interview on another radio show, and the host out of the blue said, oh, like they're reverse engineering the abductees, and or reverse engineering via the abductees. And when he said that, no, he didn't mean any, you know, he just off the cuff said it. But I was like, oh, my God, he was absolutely right. And the more I thought about it, it sunk in, and I said, that's what this is about. And I'll say it like this, and again, I'll get back to it, but I'll take it to its base level, which is, because I can explain this. But if crash retrievals, and, you know, you're probably familiar with Ryan Wood's new book about there being 74 crash retrievals, and yes, some of those may be questionable, but if any percentage of those is accurate, it's a significant number. And then you go, okay, there's these crash retrievals in the worldwide. If crash retrievals are about back engineering the technology, and why retrieve a craft? Well, obviously because you want the technology, but not so much so we can have alien technology as far as so we can build alien craft. No, it's about so we can build human craft and human technology that mirrors or mimics the alien stuff. So when I realized that and said, okay, reverse engineering the technology is not so we can have alien technology, it's so that we can have human technology that does alien stuff. And then I went, okay, they need personnel to operate that technology. How better to learn about how to operate that than from the people who've had hands-on experience? So then I realized, if reverse engineering the craft is about the technology, reabducting the abductee, interrogating them, learning what they learn, is about the personnel. It's about developing training mechanisms that they can then train the personnel who operate the technology or who interact with the aliens, because abductees have developed these abilities as just a byproduct of their experience.
Actually, I'm going to let Randy go before I make any comments.
Well, I'm sure that was thought-provoking enough for you in the audience, which is. I really commend. Well, I guess we can in turn thank this other host who prompted her to go in this direction. But however it came about, it's a good instance of critical thinking about all this. And that's what, in my opinion, that's what really needs to be done overall.
Yeah.
With regards to ufology generally, you know, and then with more critical thinking, then really beginning to work with various, you know, people or sources of information in various areas and piecing all this together. You know, from the point of view which was, she was emphasizing, what I would call the human scale. You know, some time ago I did this interview for a magazine, and there were three people that I interviewed. Melinda was one of them, Carla Turner was one, and another guy who was an abductee. And he told me something, he mentioned something that I've quoted ever since, which was one of these little brilliant insights. And he said, and then ever since I've applied this, and it works, and it applies to what Melinda just said, and that is that the he said the ET phenomena, not simply abduction, but the ET phenomena itself is a human phenomena before it's an ET phenomena. And that was like a Zen koan, you know, I thought about that for a long time. And I come to discern that I don't know how he came up with that perception, but I think he's right. Because likewise with reverse engineering, the reverse engineering was kind of like if you take a TV down into the Amazon jungle and there's some little new village there and they have electricity, you can give them the TV and they can plug it in and it'll work. So they can operate it, but they don't know anything about how it works. And it's going to take them a long time to figure it out. The ET technology must be so monumental with so many, you know, levels of quantum leaps beyond what we think we could have done before they started to become more apparent in our experience after World War II, that if we never contacted any ETs, but we had the crash saucer, I would be willing to bet that it would be very unlikely that we would be able to figure it out without help of some sort. And so, like Melinda says, in terms of, you know, figuring out how to manifest some kind of training program to do something that approximates what ETs can do without any real, you know, human experience to base it upon. Well, the only people you can point to that have had some repeatable experience are the people who claim to have had experience, either the contactees or the abductees. So that's why this is a logical extension of going beyond what they've achieved so far in abduction research and saying, well, if there are these abductees and they do claim, you know, that there are these people interceding in their life, intervening in their life to pick their brain, interrogate them for raw information, then that should be followed up. Simple. I mean, but the truth is, and this is not a put down, this is just a peer review of abduction research without naming any names. The truth is that when you go hear lectures, when you read the books, There's very little emphasis upon this unless the book is written by an abductee who had the experience. There are a few books like that. Carla Turner's book was like that. Kathy Jordan? Is that her name, Melinda?
It's Debbie Jordan.
Uh-huh. Debbie Jordan, I mean, yeah. Her book. And a few other.
Comes to mind, too.
There's not a lot of other books. There are
Leah Haley.
But there are a few. But actually, there's probably many more of the people who even may speak but have never written a book. So, you know, what we want to do is try and just bring validity and bring value to this aspect of it, so that then it can be emphasized more as being a legitimate area of pursuit.
I agree. I mean, I think it should be. You know, I've been asked a dozen times to write a book on abductions. And the thing about it is, for me, Randy, I can't figure out how to put it on paper without giving the store away. Well, it's the truth, because I've sat down 100 times. You know, somebody asked me to write about my personal experience. I said, you want to read about my personal experience? It's posted on the Internet for free for anybody who wants to read it. There's no reason to write a book about that. I said, if you want us to write a book about abductions and the cases we've done, it's not an issue, but in order to show the similarities in these cases and to really make this a convincing body of evidence, I'm going to have to give away too much of what I consider abduction criteria. So I had to kind of sit and weigh one night, what's more important? Is it more important for me to write this book and get this information out to the public, or is it more important to keep it secret so that we can keep the research going, so at least we got an idea and understanding of what's going on? Well, you see what
you mean in terms of separating the legitimate cases from, misidentification, I guess, or whatever.
We'll call them fraudulent cases, because I get people who come in that are definitely trying to portray hoaxes on us as frauds.
Oh, really, huh? Yeah.
I get people who come in who are doing this for attention and no other reason. I get people who come in this because they've had some really bad things happen to them as children, and somehow or another they made this into an abduction. Really for us, it's probably 3 out of 10 cases turn out to be something even worth researching. One of the things that we've been fortunate about within the last 5 years is we started this online support group.
Mm-hmm.
And it started getting around the community that it was there, so we've actually had people who already have dealt with a lot of the issues of being a contactee or coming into the room. So we've had a large influx of more legitimate cases, but that's not the status quo. I mean, if you talk about what we get from outside of the rooms and outside of the radio show, you know, a lot of those cases are just, for lack of a better word, they're fraudulent. I mean, they're just, and a lot of them are deliberately trying to do it. It really ticks me off because it takes a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort to really do a serious investigation. And I'm very particular about what I want. And it took us 15 years to get this abduction criteria together to where, you know, when you hand it to a body of researchers, it's legitimate evidence. Because I'll give you some examples, because I've released some stuff in the last few years, like the blue plasma. About 85% of all gray contactees have this experience with this weird blue color. It took forever to figure out what it was. After sitting down and really working with some contactees, not abductees, we got a better understanding of what this blue color was and what it was actually being used for and things like that. But that used to be an abduction criteria, but things like what the gray's eyes actually look like. I've got like 2,500 people told me the exact identical thing. The way the pupils are shaped, what the real size is, what the thick black things are. I mean, these are details that in a book would be great. It'd be a best-selling book. I have no doubt in my mind about that. But the problem is the day the book was released, I could never do a real investigation again because I'd never know who was lying and telling the truth.
Well, the way I interpret that is that you're making my case for me.
Yeah, well, no.
Because you're dealing with the authentic abduction case specifically. What we're saying, what we want to do is investigate what these humans are doing that, in terms of why the abductees are so interested to them, you know?
I agree that should be done. And it's one of the reasons, you know, when I met Melinda, it's one of the things I was really fascinated about because she was working in this area. Then she told me about you because, honestly, Randy, Melinda, There's maybe three or four legitimate abduction researchers in ufology today, and I'll say two because two of the ones that y'all consider legitimate, I consider frauds, so we're not going to go there. And, well, not frauds. I just consider them about 20 years behind the times. And the thing about it is, in the military abductions or the re-abductions, to be even less than that involved. So, yeah, I mean, this is field.
Virtually none.
You know, there's not enough people taking an interest in this, and so anytime I see anybody, you know, taking an interest in this, I'm more than happy. You know, I told Melinda anytime she wants, she can call me and pick my brain, and, you know, she's got my home number, so she can call me anytime, just pick my head. That's not even a problem. And I'm dying, like I was telling y'all at the break, I'm dying, you know, because Daryl and I are supposed to be getting together when we can juggle our schedules to actually hit the same day, just to go over these multi-generational abduction cases.
Yeah, that's fascinating because that it would go on so long in a family and that you'd be able to trace it back is because that brings up another aspect that, as I was talking about the military involvement stuff, when you get into questions about alien motives and alien technology, that makes sense. But there's another aspect that is equally important that the military abductions involve. And it's the very thing you're talking about. When you talk multi-generational, we already know from the production of, you know, the standard abduction research and accepted by all the major abduction researchers for the most part, there's a commonality that instantly comes up, and that's the taking of eggs and sperm and the production of hybrids, which isn't about a sexual thing. We've moved way beyond in abduction research, but it's about genetics. And so the multi-generational cases shows that they're following a genetic lineage. And that is extremely important because what are they doing to constantly abduct within the same line to alter those genetics over time? And that's significant because if you can start to see a new personality trait or an ability that is getting perfected from great-grandchild to grandchild to child to, you know, if you can follow that, that's, I mean, I think there's a lot of research that can be done there, and abductions have been known and around long enough, and families have known, that I think you're going to get more and more cases of this as time goes by, and more people realizing. I think it's an amazing area of research, but as I was starting to say, it gets into the military involvement, because that's another aspect they're interested in, is the genetics. And again, getting into what I was saying about reverse engineering the abductee, that fit there for me as well because, as I was saying, you need, if reverse engineering is about the technology, reverse engineering the abductee is about the personnel, and it's because when you reverse engineer the technology, what do you need? You need an alien to operate alien technology. You need a human to operate human technology. But what do you need to operate hybrid technology? You need a hybrid. So the genetic interest that the aliens have in us and the manipulating that may be going on that allows abductees to be able to do things like operate the technology, like have developed psi abilities, have developed mental capacities, all these things that I think there's a lot of research to be done there that's in the genealogy research you're doing. But also, this is what the military guys are interested in, is this genetic aspect. And again, it's because you need a hybrid or some hybrid abilities to be able to operate hybrid technology in some regards. Now, I think mostly what they're doing is they're doing mostly human technology that mimics alien technology. But to get better at it, to have the stuff that's more and more alien, you need people who can operate the technology with more and more alien abilities. And I don't think, and I'm going to clarify this right here, I don't think they're using the abductees themselves to do that. In some training cases, yes, but I think what they're really doing is they're developing abilities by monitoring, studying, questioning abductees, and developing training procedures that they're then able to turn around and train military and covert intelligence personnel on some of those abilities. And Grant, I mean, we're talking, it's a long ways away from probably being anywhere even close to the aliens. But I think there's an interest in that because they realize there's to operate hybrid technology, you have to have hybrid abilities. And so that goes along with their interest in the genetics and what the aliens are doing with us genetically. Just like you're looking at genealogy, why is this happening continually in this family? How are these people being altered over time? Is there any altering being done? Or, you know, all that kind of stuff that I'm sure is part of your research. If we have those questions as researchers in the abduction field, those guys with the bucks to back their research, if you think about it that way, the covert intelligence guys with the financial backing, if we're looking at that, what do you bet they've been looking at it 20 years ago? In other words, the background and histories, and I would suspect that the My Lab, or, you know, that means military abduction for those who don't know, but that military involvement stuff, you may find that in these, I'd be interested to know if you find that in these histories going back with these families. If those people have the military stuff, and if the people with where it goes back in their families, if that involvement goes back in their families, I think I would not be surprised that there'll be a correlation there.
Well, I got a little interesting piece of information for you on the military abductions, and I'm having this verified, by the way. When the Raptor was first being developed, you know the Marines ordered Raptors without joysticks. And ladies and gentlemen, most of y'all should know that, but they ordered them without joysticks. I got these little things that fit on your head, and the plane is controlled by thought.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about that is when the first 5 years, when this was actually put on the block for development, the military abductions in those 5 years, and you can directly go back and see, are up about 60 to 80%. They're way higher those years than they were in past years. It seemed like they were using, one of the things we learned with the family lines is that if you go back to the great-grandmother, okay, and you give her a psychic ability test, clairvoyancy, not clairvoyancy, but usually we type for empathic abilities or telepathic abilities is what we usually test for. You'll find that the grandmother, the great-grandmother, does have this ability somewhat. You will find that the daughter has it a little bit more, or her kids have it a little bit more. You will find that their kids actually have it quite a bit more. When you get to the great-granddaughter or great-grandson, they're actually quite good. I mean, some of these children, I shouldn't call them children because some of these people are in their 20s and 30s now, but some of these children we met, their psychic abilities are fantastic. Some of them we tested are in the 80 and 90 percentile. You ask them a question, if you put something in your head, they have it immediately. And it is amazing to watch this, and I know the military has been tracking this because this is very useful for the military. But one of the things that it did tell me, though, you know, because people always talk about all these crash sources. First off, I don't buy that because I don't think E.T.'s that ignorant. I don't think they crash that often. Secondly, I don't really think E.T. would leave their people or their materials behind. Because if they can come in and take you anytime they want, anywhere they want, they can do the same thing with their equipment. So, yeah, I have issues with crash things because of a couple of reasons.
Can I say real quick something that another researcher said? Of course, maybe this is what you're about to say, but that that they believe that since it is probably not that likely that the aliens crash. I mean, they may. I mean, they're craft.
Yeah.
There's entities operating craft, just like we crash cars and planes. They're capable of it. They make mistakes too. I don't think they're so advanced that they don't make mistakes. But in some cases, there's been a lot of suggestion that they may be gifts, if you will, that it's some stuff that's being given up almost purposefully.
You know, and it's true, because about 10 years ago I had talked to released some information about the Roswell thing, and since then I've found some stuff to correlate what I was saying then. But it is interesting, because it would make more sense to me that we were given the craft and maybe we crashed it, because I just don't see E.T. leaving their stuff behind. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I know we got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Melinda Leslie and Randy Coben. And as I promise, as soon as we return from the break, we'll start taking some questions. So please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
Captain's log. According to reports from the Minnesota DNR, we are waist deep in a lake infested with...
Captain, the ship is surrounded by exotic species known as Eurasian water milfoil, zebra mussels, and spiny water flea.
Doctor, what's affecting our Vulcan friend?
Jim, it appears the Vulcan's vocal cords are clogged with zebra mussels.
Engineering, beam them up.
Oh, sir, I got no power. The milfoil's infested with lithium crystals. The spiny water flea are doing chorus line with the photon torpedoes. And the zebra mussels help block out the warp drive.
Bones, is there anything that can be done about these exotic species before they spread to other lakes?
Jim, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Just clean or dry out your boat and drain your bait bucket before sinking into another lake. If you see things hanging from your boat or motor, pull them off. If you don't, it's a hefty fine from the DNR. Remember, clean boats mean clean waters.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production. Now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let y'all get some questions in. I promise I'm going to let y'all get them in. But before I do that, I want Melinda and Randy just to tell us a little bit about the book, and then we'll go ahead and open the lines up for questions. So who wants to go first, Melinda, Randy?
Well, I'll just say this. You know, I was going to mention something about it, and then during the break I thought, you know, what I should do is ask Randy. So I'll say, Randy, go ahead and, if you will, give, you know, like the full title and how to order it and all that kind of information. But also maybe when you're done doing that, give a brief synopsis about what it's about. Because I think we've given people the impression it's about this military involvement. And, well, it's really only about, like, a third or maybe half about that. So, anyways, Randy, take it away.
Well, the title, the actual title will be Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure. Okay, that's in quotes because that's a quote from the book Day After Roswell by Colonel Philip Corso. And although the original concept for the book did not originate with me reading Corso's book, I realized upon reading two chapters in particular in his book that he actually spells out something that was immensely important in terms of ufology generally with regards to what they call the cover-up. And he had this phrase in here that he came up in that book that he came up with, which was this phrase, camouflage through limited disclosure. And the reason why I decided the title of the book, this phrase, was because we realized that actually there is a cover-up, but only in the sense that the official disclosure is not happening the way everybody like Stephen Greer or whatever would like it to happen. And it's just the ET phenomena is being disclosed in another way, unofficially. And in fact, that's what Corso spells out. Now, just because Corso says it doesn't prove it's true, so I took his very lengthy kind of like explanation for how this idea came to be, which is a very compelling story in and of itself. Too bad we don't have Corso to develop it further because he died, but nonetheless, I took it as a concept, and I decided to go back into, you know, the greater community and the information being developed by the various researchers, and see if that all made sense. And in fact, it does make sense. In fact, it's the only explanation that allows you to define the cover up properly, in the sense that if you really go to the trouble of reading, especially the old books. Much less the newer ones, but especially the older ones, and then you, and then in the area of abductions, what Melinda discerned there with regards to the MyLab subset of abductions, it was very clear that there was seemingly a contradictory set of circumstances within that group, the MyLab group, which is what sometimes the humans who intervene in their lives can try and control their lives in the sense of what the people say about their experience. If the people are attempting to go public or if they do go public, then you may find these humans intervening try to either dissuade them from speaking about certain aspects of their abductee experience or perhaps even encouraging them to talk about certain other things. And seemingly that's a paradox and contradictory, but actually that is consistent with ufology generally, because if you read certain books, in fact I'll name one, namely Flying Saucers Top Secret by Donald Keough, which came out in 1960. At that time they weren't dealing with abductions, but they were dealing with the contradictory policies of the military and what the military was doing to either, on the one hand, try to debunk or dissuade people that any of this was true, but on the other hand, he fully documents a number of cases and instances and very compelling stories that actually confirm the opposite, wherein they were reporting the validity of the encounter phenomena. And so what I've perceived now at this point in time, after nearly 6 years, this is the 59th year of ufology if you start in 1947, if you look back now from this point of view, you see that within the greater body of ufology, there actually is this pattern of contradiction, and it takes many forms. And sometimes it confirms the phenomena, sometimes it debunks it, sometimes it just kind of like is neutral, but they don't want to take a stand, and goes back and forth like that. And you could do many programs on the nature of this to try and go through the various scenarios wherein this is defined. But frankly, I think it's too complex to do that. So what I tried to do was boil it down to a few cases. And so the book is actually not divided into chapters. It's just divided into three parts. The first part is a long introduction that I write wherein I bring various elements like this together. And then I have two case histories that I focus on at length. One is Melinda's research. And then the third part, which is kind of like the culmination, is the account basically transcribed from his own very low-profile public presentations that the guy gave, namely a man named Bill Uhouse. Bill Uhouse is still alive, but now he's apparently gone back into the underground world where he came from when he retired. He was a career mechanical engineer who alleges that he was employed for his entire professional career for 38 years. And even that's not true because he went back in. So his son said, I interviewed his son, his adult son, and verified that he had retired. Bill had retired for a few years, but then they apparently required him to come back in to work as a consultant of some sort, because at this point he's probably over 80 years old. But this guy's story is absolutely so more compelling than just about anybody you've ever heard. And he tells it himself, and he illustrated it himself. He was an artist, and he claims to have been hired in 1953 as a mechanical engineer to devote his entire career on the design and construction of a device that would be otherwise called an aircraft simulator, like when they train pilots to fly airliners.
Like a flight training simulator, right?
Yeah, exactly, flight training simulator. This is part of the logic applied to the whole phenomena of the possibility or the alleged scenario of reverse engineering. Well, if they are reverse engineering real ET craft, then they have to have a flight simulator to train the pilots in it. And Uhouse comes out of the woodwork. And virtually no one in ufology knows who this guy is, because he kept a very low profile, but he did speak on occasion for about 4 or 5 years, and then he dropped out. And according to his son, he's back at work at Los Alamos, where he was employed before he retired. And he helped design and implement the original, what he claimed were the original initial flight simulators for anti-gravity levitation craft. And he tells his whole career story of how he got into this. And when they recruited him, they didn't tell him that that's what he was going to do. In fact, he claims that he didn't even get a clearance to do what he was ultimately hired to do until almost 5 years later. 4.5 years he was involved in it before it ever actually came around. But the thing about his case is so compelling, because when you compare it to independent sources about this various phenomena, it all dovetails together perfectly. And that's why I believe, point one, that he was actually, you know, totally legitimate, and that his story, as it is consistent with any other thing, such as the whole proposition of Lieutenant Colonel Corso's book, was essentially this proposition that this reverse engineering was going on, and that leads us back to the cover-up, because the issue of the cover-up was not, according to Corso, not to actually keep a secret from the public at large about the most incredible history, you know, in the history of mankind. But actually it was only to basically create a scenario of sociological acclimation. Because if they were to tell the people overtly, in so many words, that this was the case at that time, you know, in the late 1940s, no one would have believed it anyway. You know, we have the history of what happened when Orson Welles put the War of the Worlds on the radio, and people freaked out. So there's no reason to believe that people would be any different, you know, 10 years later. So according to Corso, what they decided to do was they decided to create kind of like a system of information. And part of that system required the basic premise to be debunked. But on the other hand, to equate with that part of the system would require for information to actually leak out and to be confirmed.
And in other words, like the quote says, they're camouflaging it. So it's not so much a cover-up.
Right.
It's camouflaging it, you know, putting the spin on it, camouflaging it through a very limited controlled disclosure. So they're always in control of the public perception of the subject.
Right, right. Everybody who's been following kind of like the revisionist historical assessment of the activities of the intelligence community of this country, especially in this day and age with the war and, you know, there's great controversies flowing about what the intelligence community is or isn't doing. They may remember that there was this idea that was attributed to the CIA in terms of public relations, and it's called, quote, perception management, unquote. Well, that's exactly what the cover-up is, in fact, a system of. It's a system of perception management. And in fact, if you think about it, and I'm not trying to defend their decision to do this, but my, you know, our collaboration has totally validated what Corso said, you know, in spades, in many ways. It's the only explanation that makes sense. Because if you were in their shoes at this particular time, you would not have decided to disclose this to the public either. And then the reasons why I'm sure that they have continued to do this have changed over the years. And in fact, what I articulate in great detail, in fact, I try and bend over backwards in great detail to make this all kind of like, you know, logically fit together in many areas that otherwise might not be seen to be related. But that's the way reality itself works, in fact, as we all know, if we really think about it. There's many things that come into our life that we find of value that heretofore we never thought would be anything we'd even be interested in. But things are related on any number of different levels. Mm-hmm. And so what we ultimately realize with this, at this particular time now in the 21st century, probably the primary reason why it hasn't been disclosed, to Dr. Stephen Greer's chagrin, is simply an economic consideration. Because if you were to admit that the ETs were here, and then all the, you know, cumulative research of ufology comes into play and is validated and then becomes taken seriously by the science community at large, then you open up a can of worms as far as technological development goes that could upset the, you know, balance of power of a petroleum-based world economy. And you don't want to do that. Certainly not in light of having a war over oil this time.
Yeah.
I tell you, what I mean.
Kind of a ridiculous war. But I'm going to stop you all right there because I want to get some questions. And we've got 15 minutes left before the next break. So.
And I'll say there's lots I could say in response, but I know we want to allow for questions, so I'll...
We're going to ask some quick questions. We'll get some questions out of the way, and then we're going to get back. There's a couple other things I want to talk to, and I know we're already into the second hour, so there's just never enough time on this show. I swear, I got to talk Jeff into getting another hour.
Okay.
But anyhow, let's grab some quick questions. I see Gossamer's been patiently waiting now. So, Gossamer, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air.
Good evening, Melinda and Randy. It's good to have you on the show. My name is David Andrew, and I'm Arizona State Director for IACAR. I got three quick questions here. I was just curious, how many cases of rehabs or MILHABs have you guys documented now? And these people that are experiencing this, are they abductees of a particular species of ET? And also, has anyone reported seeing ETs in combination with the military at the time of a rehab? Thank you.
I'll go ahead and grab those real quick. Joe has a lot more cases than I do, so I'll say that right off the top. It's not like I've gone out necessarily looking for cases in a big way. I get people referred to me, and known cases start telling me their story, this kind of thing. I have done over 40, I'd have to sit down and count, but over 40 in-depth interviews at this point, and I was probably familiar with a good another 100 cases on top of that. So let's say I'm well familiar with 150 MILAB cases, of which, or rehab cases, I'll get into that in a sec, but that I've, you know, in-depth investigated And it's not so much an investigation as it's been a series of in-depth interviews of over 40. But like I said, I'm familiar with, and I have a whole list. I have a list of at least that many more, let's say another 50 people. Like I said, I'm familiar with another 100 cases. Half of those 100 are on my list of people I need to interview. One of them, interestingly enough, Joe, here going back to the comments I made earlier, is a family where the mother, father, and children, actually, now they say that, I have two families that are having this happen with the military stuff. And both of these, now one of them I did do a thorough interview of the mother. I need to talk to the kids, and I definitely need to talk to her husband, because they have experiences together and experiences apart, and there's some differences in their experiences when they were apart. As far as their military experience, they were both used in training exercises, and there was a difference in the type of training they were used for. One was in a more of a procedural combat, hands-on, find, search, rescue, escape kind of stuff, and the other one was more of a controlling technology with your mind kind of stuff. And that's interesting, because we have a couple that's been even taken together in the same military experiences and yet separated, and she had this mental training stuff, and he was used in these more like military search rescue kind of stuff. And it's interesting that there's this difference, you know, and their kids had stuff. So here we have an experience where the kids are having things separately. So that's about the number. As far as what types of aliens are seen, by the abductees, these people are very typical abduction cases for the most part when it comes to their ET abduction stuff. They've had a variety of types, and you know, it's probably would make anybody's top 10 list of the types of aliens they've experienced. As far as with the military, have people seen aliens with the military? Yes, absolutely. Predominantly two or three types that have come up. It's one of those areas that I think would require more research. It's not enough in my cases that I can say, well, it's one or the other or this, but out of the 40 in-depth interviews and out of the 100 more or so cases I'm familiar with, I can clearly off the top of my head say three different types of aliens have been seen with the military. And in somewhat in a different capacity, like there's somewhat a different kind of involvement. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wait, somebody just asked me which ETs have been seen with the military. You got an idea?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I missed it. Hey, look, come. You know? Go ahead.
Yeah, Grays, you know, in a variety of heights, but I think mostly taller ones, but basically grays, and reptilians. The other one that has been seen a little bit, well, it's kind of variations on hybrid. It may be a combination of Nordics. It may be hybrids. It may be a combination. Sometimes it's kind of hard, as I'm sure you're well aware, to label what that is. All I could say is they're a lot more human-looking. But definitely, I mean, I feel secure in saying hybrids, grays, and reptilians have absolutely been seen with the military.
I think we've categorized 11 types of gray now. At first we thought they were different aliens, then we realized they were the same damn aliens. Mainly because they fly the same ships. That was kind of a giveaway. And you see, that's things you learn, though, guys and girls, when you do a lot of investigation. That's how you learn stuff. Y'all ready for another question, Randy?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. We've got TRMT-137 been patiently waiting. So, TRMT, why don't you give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Randy and Melinda.
Hi, good evening, Ms. Leslie and Mr. Kopang. Teresa from Massachusetts. Ms. Leslie, on past Wake Up interviews and in your excellent 2005 X-Conference presentation, you described situations where humans, assuming an authority role, performed without due process interrogations and other procedures on human victims of prior forced alien contact. Also, there seems to be an increasing number of individuals of all backgrounds asserting some type of alien experience, whether negative or positive, and seeking information thereon. My question of Ms. Leslie and Mr. Kopang, Would you agree that the intrusive and aggressive measures described in the reported re-abduction scenarios would produce data which would not be as useful, verifiable, or extensive as would information received from lawful, non-traumatic, and transparent interchanges between the human data seekers, information seekers, and the human experiencers of alien contact? Thanks for your responses.
Thanks for the question. Who wants to field it?
Randy, you want to take a stab? Of course I can respond, but I'm going to take a stab at it, Randy.
Well, I think the obvious answer is, of course, if they interrogated people, interrogation is not really a value-laden term necessarily. I mean, you can be interrogated in a benign way. She's asking if it would be much more constructive and productive to actually bring people in and interrogate them about their experiences in a more benign and enlightened set of circumstances. I'm sure they probably would get more from them. I don't recall that Melinda and I have talked so much about that alternative scenario specifically, but I think in our many discussions about the cases, you know, the various case histories of certain people, it suggests that there are states of mind which apparently the victims, shall we say, are put into that aren't necessarily what you might expect. In other words, the victims seem to be put into an altered state of mind for a certain reason, and so therefore it might be independent of whether or not the person was taken by force or whether or not they were voluntarily, you know, trying to partake in the information gathering process, because they put them apparently on a routine basis. They put them into altered states through various means. You want to develop that further, Melinda?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right, and you're taking it. Well, it's twofold. And one is we're getting into the other area of my labs. That's as predominant as alien motives, questions about technology, genetics, and producing those abilities. And then the other one is both as a byproduct and developmental of mind control. There's the big bugaboo. It's first off, they can't out and outright, I mean, I would love it if they would knock on my door and say, we have to talk to you, we need to understand this. But to do that would be, what do you call that? Oh, yeah, disclosure. And remember, there is a policy of non-disclosure. So they can't approach the abductees in that kind of open way where the abductee would say, hey, yesterday these guys came and talked to me and they asked me to do this, and that abductee would go to the researchers and give them the guys' names and, you know. In other words, they're doing it in a covert way because there is a policy of non-disclosure, a cover-up. Because of their whole manipulation of the subject matter being so deep that it's like it's extremely risky for them to use abductees, because there is the risk of them being found out, which is something I'll get into in just a second here. But in that, there is this need to do it in a covert, masked way. And then, on top of it, it's a great further justification for doing it anyways, because they can learn about alien mind control procedures. That's another thing. What have you been through as an abductee? What did they do to you? What did they show you? Alien motives and this kind of stuff gets into the manipulation and control that the aliens are able to do. And then, also as a byproduct, they then develop procedures, they being the military guys, the covert intelligence guys, they develop procedures that they then are able to practice and further using the abductees. So it's become a great lab for mind control. And so a lot of the abductees go through a lot of mind control. And how you intimidate and bury memories, well, I'm not an authority on this, so I can't say, but it appears that they have learned, and I'm just saying it appears, because, again, I'm not an authority, but it appears that they have learned that fear is a great way to intimidate and to bury memories, combined with a lot of elaborate drugs. And in the military experiences, there's a lot of drugging. It's usually layered. You may be given one thing in this scenario and then one thing here. You're given one thing when you're taken from home or taken from your car or taken from your hotel or wherever it is. You're given another thing when they get you to the place. You're given another thing during the interrogation. Then you're given something after the interrogation so you won't remember what they asked you. And then you're given something else when they bring you back to your environment. I mean, it's extremely layered. And I'm getting this from all my cases who experience this. And then, you know, so it's the drugs, the intimidation, they're obviously trying to cover up what they do. They're not perfect at it. We do remember, just like the aliens aren't perfect. I mean, the human mind is incredible, and the will of the person. And if a person is strong-willed in the experience, they're able to alter, change, and remember their alien abduction experiences. And same with the military experiences. You're able to alter, change, affect, and remember them. And again, it takes kind of the same strong will, clearness of mind, and presence in the experience to not get caught up in the fear. Now, I always say this, too. You know, it's like the aliens. Trauma in an alien experience, and Joe, you can stop me if you disagree here, but trauma in an alien experience seems to be more of a human reaction to the experience. Yes, you're traumatized, but it's not, in some rare incidences, yes, but all in all, in most of the cases I'm familiar with, it's not like the aliens try to traumatize the person. There's not a deliberate attempt to induce trauma. You have trauma as a byproduct, possibly, because you're fearful, it's the unknown, the high strangeness of it. It's scary, these beings.
Well, I agree, but let me stop you right there because we got to take a break. Actually, I agree with what you were saying, but we got to take a break. Also, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to go to break right now. It's the last break of the night. We're only going to take two more questions when we come back from the break.
As soon as we come back, I'll finish my thought very quickly on that.
Oh, yeah, I'll let you finish when we come back. We're going to come back, take the next two questions, and then there's a couple things I want to talk to Melinda and Randy about. So if you want those questions, stay tuned. On that note, we're going to be taking a small break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Mantella. I'm sitting and speaking with Randy and Melinda, and as soon as we come back, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around on your butt all day. You're on the move, and you need your music. This station is linked with a mobile broadcast network, which makes it possible for you to hear your favorite internet broadcasts live on your cell phone, anytime, anywhere. Get connected. Go to www.mymbn.com. The mobile broadcast network is brought to you exclusively by Access Voice.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
You know, finding the time ain't so easy. Not gonna find it in your coat pocket or cleaning out the attic. Uh-huh. Time is elusive. But you can find some extra time at the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. Just a few minutes gets you endless oven-fresh pizzas with all kinds of crusts, including America's favorite, the Pizza Hut pan pizza, plus crisp salad and mouth-watering dessert that's ready when you are. The Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, every Monday through Friday. Pizza Hut. Gather around the good stuff.
Prices, dates, times, items, and participation may vary by location. Dine-in only.
SRN 1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Millions of people are doing it on Peltalk already. Meet new friends. You will be seen on webcams and share files with real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICQ buddies from one list. Peltalk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. Peltalk, communication beyond words.
Good evening and welcome. welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I want to welcome everybody back. I'm going to let Melinda finish what she was saying before we went to the break, since I had to rudely interrupt her. Then we're going to come back, take two more questions, and then we're going to close out the questions. So go ahead, Melinda.
Well, what I was saying was, and you were saying you agreed with me in your research, that in abduction cases, trauma is a byproduct. It's a natural human reaction to an alien experience. The aliens aren't, except for, like I said, maybe in some very rare accounts, the aliens don't purposefully try to induce trauma. But in the military experiences, these guys deliberately induce trauma. They know they're traumatizing you, and they do so on purpose. And it's part of, I think, burying the memory. It's part of the mind control procedures.
I want to make a comment with regards just to the proposition or the perspective that the caller was taking, which was I thought she articulated it very well, and I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, the perspective that she was taking on the scenario, in other words, what if they interrogated people in a fair way where they were trying to persuade or involving people who were cooperative, you know, and the whole thing was a cooperative endeavor. That is the kind of question that you ask when you live in the rational world. But the people who are actually dealing with what this issue is about all have this very adversarial, fear-based mindset, because that's what you have to have to be in that kind of a world. You know what I mean? Military-industrial world. What does the military-industrial people do? They create weapons because they're afraid. We have to, you know, defend ourselves or attack people or whatever the hell it is. You know, I have to sound blunt about that, but the reality that we all live in is that basically the powers that be generally don't have that perspective on things and don't behave cooperatively in the type of scenario that we're trying to describe. And so it's really not an issue that we consider because that's not what the facts bear out, unfortunately.
No. And that goes back to the nature of your whole book, Randy. It's understanding how the whole control and manipulation of the subject, which trickles down into their interaction with abductees in this military way, but it goes into their handling of the whole UFO subject. From the get-go, this was handed over to military intelligence, military-industrial, you know, complexes, and it was handled in that way. So it became national security. It became an intelligence operation. It became a military operation. And and in doing so, they really did all of Earth a great injustice in our realizing our relationship to the greater universe, to other beings, to this interaction, to our spiritual growth. You know, get into that subject, but it was handled wrong from the get-go, and these guys forced themselves in to a catch-22, like you were saying. With their mindset, they said, well, we can't allow people to know, you know, and even the insiders have said, we can't allow them to know till we know more about it. We have to get a handle on it. And then they backed themselves into a corner by developing this entire intelligence complex around it, where now they can't let it out because it would be the complete crash of an entire huge economic system.
Right.
And they can't crash that economic system. And so now they're backed into a corner. And granted, I think we have some of them. And then you say, well, why are we getting some disclosure? Well, we're getting some disclosure, I think, twofold, and I think Randy would agree with me. One is, it's the overall way of manipulating and controlling the subject and to slowly leak it out. And two is, there are groups on the inside, there are parts of that cover-up cabal, if you will, that realized this mistake was made and realized that they're putting all of Earth in jeopardy by not bringing us up to speed. And so you have some people wanting to leak stuff out for those very altruistic, you know, reasons, and then you have others leaking it out as a way to control and spin the subject continually. And so you be careful when you get an insider talking to you, because you have to question what is their motive, what is their manipulation, because they may be just creating more spin, or they may actually be about enlightening people, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. In the book, I actually go to great lengths to articulate a set of circumstances wherein what's actually probably happening is that the unofficial disclosure as it unfolds through the years may actually be used to the disadvantage of people in light of the possibility that it might be more advantageous for the powers that be to allow people to accept the fact that ETs are here, but not that they are benign, but that they're a potential threat. And in fact, from a benign perspective, they are a threat, but benignly, in the sense that they're a threat basically to the prevailing consensus cosmology of planet Earth. In the consensus cosmology, there are no extraterrestrials.
Yeah, well,
okay?
That's
there aren't any. And so if all of a sudden you were to admit that there were, then we have to have the proverbial paradigm shift. And that's what that's what that phrase means. Paradigm shift means that we have a different cosmology. The cosmology is that they're ETs in the universe. They're coming here now. You know? Simple as
and
that.
Coming here for a long time, maybe since the beginning of time.
I'm glad
as we all know who've researched this, the indigenous people, you know, the indigenous Americans or the indigenous wherever, the truth is that they keep their own oral history to themselves, and in their history, the ETs are there, but they keep that to themselves. So.
Randy, if I may really quick, because I know we're starting to run out time, I want to make sure that people know how to order your book, because I'm so thrilled to be a part of it, and I want people to be able to check it out. You can order it from, everybody get your pens and pencils and pieces of paper out there, from the Book Tree Books in San Diego, California. Again, that's the Book Tree Books, San Diego, California, and an 800 number is 800-700-8733. Again, that's 800-700-8733. And you could probably order it from there, but realize it's going to be probably about 2 months before you'll have it in your hands.
Oh, see, y'all just teasing me. That is just wrong. There's something I wanted to say earlier, too, because Randy had said something about, you know, ufology in the last 50 years or so, and I got to thinking about it, and it is something we will be releasing this year, but in the Sumerian text, they have a section, actually it's a part of the society that used to watch the skies for weird, strange things that used to fly around in the skies.
They call them watchers.
Yeah, well, when we found that out, we went ahead and did a research and found out that the Chinese and the Babylonians and the Egyptians and the Mayans, Inc., and the Aztecs also did. So, for me, ufology started 6,000 years ago. Hard to make everyday people understand that until you give them the evidence, but it is something different. One of ICAR's goals always has been is, one, to help unite ufology, and two, to present ufology in a much different way than it's been being presented in the last 20 years, because it's just been pathetic. But people want, you know, we don't even try to convince people that aliens are here anymore. All we do is tell them, look, guys, here's the evidence. There's something going on. It warrants a serious investigation by a very serious group of people. Here it is. Do something with it. And I noticed that most Americans and most Europeans, when you present it that way, they're kind of like awestruck. They're like, damn, there's a ton of data. There's a ton of information, and they're just awestruck. And we never told them, you know, we let them make up their own mind if it's alien or not. But once you get them hooked, they're looking after that, and they'll make their own decisions. But I noticed that doing it this way, we get a lot more people involved, and presenting ufology as a united front helps to get people more involved. I had to talk with Stephen Bissett about this, and actually pretty much everybody in ufology now, and really, we all agree that the planet's being visited, so I don't understand why as a group we don't present it that way. Like at the conferences, I mean, it's a given. We all think ET's here, we should all agree upon that, even if we put it in writing somewhere that we all agree on that. We don't have to agree on what they're doing here, because that's always going to be an argument, but we all do agree that they're here, and it should be posted that way, and there should be a list somewhere you can look.
You're right, that they're here and that there is evidence for their being here. Yeah.
Yeah, historical. I totally agree with what you said, both historically and about the need for ufology to kind of like I don't know, reorganize or reinvent itself in terms of what it contends is their goal, you know, in existence, right? Because they should be more collaborative than they are.
Yes, they should be a lot more collaborative than what they are. I've been fortunate because, you know, I used to be a member of MUFON way, way back, just in past. But, you know, it was funny, too, because I had Walt Anders on the show a few weeks back. He actually joined ICAR while he was on the show. That tripped me out totally. But, yeah, it did. It just flipped me out. It really did. But I've been lucky. Like, Brian Vike, he'll send me any data he's got, anything I ask him for, he's got. Melinda Vike, that if I call her and say, Melinda, you got something? I need something. And pretty much, I've been real lucky with everybody in the field that I can call them up personally at home and say, hey, look, I'm working on this. Do you know anything about it? Do you have any information that's pertinent to it? Could you help? And they're willing to share. Whereas, for some reason, infighting inside ufology is just at a record high. You know, I'm at these conferences thinking, Jesus, people, get along. I mean, we don't have to agree on what's going on in abductions. We already agree ET's here. Come on. I don't find it to be that complicated, Randy and Melinda. I just don't. But for some reason, I guess egos, and there are some. You can't be.
That's the problem right there.
And people trying to grab, and this is part of the problem, too. We're trying to grab onto this credibility of someone's got, because they're more down to earth, they got to, you know, they need to appear more credible than someone else. And it's everyone struggling to appear credible. What we have to realize is we're not going to get that from. But because, like Randy just said, the old paradigm, the paradigm, the cosmology does not allow for this. So we can never appear within that paradigm, within that cosmology. We're talking about something removed and outside of there. So we have to get beyond the credibility issue and get down to who's just doing good research. Are we dotting our I's, crossing our T's? Are we doing thorough research? And let the research speak for itself and get out of the credibility ego thing that is putting us in competition with each other. If it was just about a competition over who's doing better research, that would be good, but it's not. It's about who's more credible as a person, which is a defensive ego mode, and I believe that the cover-up guys, the non-disclosure guys, are manipulating that on purpose. I think they're spinning that because it keeps us from going anywhere.
Oh, yeah, the powers that be would love, or do love, the fact that ufology is kind of like a hotbed of debate and bickering about things. Probably a lot of it doesn't even matter, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as long as people are bickering and debating back and forth, they're divided and conquered. It's the way it works.
It is, and it's true. It's a true statement, and it is one of the things since I decided to come public, because, you know, I used to always do this kind of stuff behind the scenes, but when I decided to come public with this about 6 years ago, it's one of the things I've been pushing for, and now I have a really big mouth and a big avenue to get it out, so it is starting to change. I have noticed that a lot of the, what I like to call the new guard of ufologists, they're tending to be a little bit more friendly with each other. They're tending to stick together, do a little bit more sharing. The old guard, they're still the old guard. They don't really want to share any data. They don't really want to change. I'll give you an example, and I really shouldn't do this, but I'll make this real quick. You know, we were at the Laughlin Conference, and I stopped to chat with two other abduction researchers, two very famous abduction researchers that happen to be working together right now. Now, I was sitting at the table with them for about an hour talking. In that hour, not only did the guy that one of them wrote a book about joined ICAR, that everyone at the table listening joined ICAR, because in the conversation you could tell how much further along we were than these two guys. Now, what's a shame about this is both these guys have been doing research longer than I have been, and their conclusions are right. They're just 20 years out of date. They haven't took the information that they got 20 years ago and expanded on it to present day, trying to understand what the alien agenda may be, why they do certain things, why they abduct certain ways in certain age groups, when does this actually happen? We all know it happens before birth now. It used to be everybody always said, oh, abductions start around 5 or 6. That's not true. They start in the womb. So the thing about it is, you know, we've learned a lot over the years, but these guys just seem to be stuck in a rut. Now, I have met a few that do change their ideas, some of the old guys that are willing to entertain new ideas. and start working with some of the younger ufologists. And when I say younger ufologists, we're talking people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Sad but true.
This isn't like we're talking about 18-year-old kids here. We're actually talking about some wealthy
40-year-olds.
We're talking about an older group of people here. It's just compared to the old guard, we're not. You know, we're actually younger than them, and they seem to be very stuck in their ways. And a lot of them are very nice. Don't get me wrong. I got working relationships with four or five of them. It's just they're hard-headed, they're egotistical, and they don't want to change their ways.
Yeah.
And I even sat down with one of them and showed him where he was wrong. I said, look, here's the data. This is what you think. This is what the data shows. I said, you can check this for yourself. And he still won't change his mind about it. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's your prerogative.
Well, then what you need to do is you need to emphasize that basically that kind of point of view is not a scientific point of view. And ostensibly, the way that ufology garners mainstream credibility or mainstream acceptability, you know, the premise is that they have to be more scientific. Well, you run into somebody who's not being scientific because they have a bias and they don't acknowledge new data, then basically it's not a criticism of what they say, it's a criticism of their process, which is not scientific at all, and therefore they're doing a disservice to the institution of ufology.
Yeah,
you know?
Which is why
and on those terms, it's not like a personal attack. It's just say, well, look, are we going to be scientific or not?
Which gets back to what I said a little while ago, let the research speak for itself.
Right.
You know, are you doing good research? If you're doing good research, the research will hold up. If you're dotting your eyes, crossing your T's, it'll hold up.
You know, that's funny you think that, because I was talking with Daryl a couple of weeks back on the show, and he said something about research. I said, I'll tell you what, Daryl. Instead of boring you with the paperwork, I said, when I come up to Houston, I'll bring four or five contactees with me. He's like, you would. And I said, I most certainly will. I said, I'll load them in a car and bring them with me, man. He was like, I said, yeah. I said, why not? It's hands-on research. You can do it yourself. I said, that way you get crisp, clean information that way. I said, you're not getting a biased opinion. Because any of my research, as I go, you know, I take it every so often, and I sit down, and I go through everything, and then I just come up with that, and then I hand it out to the groups of people that we work with, and I let them kind of fine-tune it or change it, you know. But it really works out really nice, and it gives us a much crisper and much more hard-line understanding of abductions and what's going on in them. And since y'all are working with the Mill Labs now, and it's something we're getting into, it'll give us the ability to be a little bit more hard-line there and be a little bit more data-orientated. Because I like a good story like anybody else, but I want to document as much as possible just because I just want it. It's not like we're going to have to turn this information over to anybody, because you can't give all these people's names out, but you can give your findings from the information out. And you still have the database where you can prove where you've talked to all of these people and had all these questionnaires done and stuff. So that helps out quite a lot. But I tell y'all what, I know we get about 9 minutes. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question, because I see John Cools has had his hand up there and he's been patiently waiting. So, John, why don't you come up, give us your first name, which I'm assuming is John, and your location, and you're live and on the air with Randy and Melinda.
Okay, thank you, Jojo. My question, my name is John Cools from the Netherlands again. My question would be, I have two questions, by the way. One question is the connection between gifted people who have maybe psychic abilities and being maybe connected to MILLABS? And the other question is, I just recently saw the documentary of Dan Aykroyd, UFO Unplugged, and he was describing his MIP experience, Men in Black experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me because I have a similar case in my own experience. So is there a connection also with the MIB to the MILLABS? That's my question.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely a branch of the same thing. Now, some MIB experiences may be more along the lines of aliens, like hybrids, Nordics kind of stuff from some of the accounts, but many of the accounts fall into that it is some form of you know, government intelligence, military intelligence kind of core group. And so without a doubt, some of those cases, in fact, some people say, well, I had an MIB experience, and when they go on to explain it to me, it's a typical covert intelligence military experience like I'm usually talking about, and they've just learned to label it. So it's kind of a labels game. But some people who have had the MIB experiences, again, as I said, some of them are very alien experiences. And it's definitely connected, and I look at those cases closely to see how, because then I also look, are they having other stuff going on? Usually when someone has the military involvement, they're not just having the confrontation or the re-abduction. Usually it starts, and I count cases that say, well, I'm not having any of that, but I was harassed by a black helicopter. I count that as a case that has had the low-grade harassment surveillance. They may say, I'm not having any of that, but I'm having my phone tampered with. I've been called and harassed on the phone, or my mail's been opened. And then all this stuff starts to escalate the more and more involved these covert groups get in somebody's life, and it doesn't end with the re-abduction interrogation stuff. That's about the middle. There are deepening levels of involvement beyond that that get down into manipulating someone's life, actually somebody marrying somebody that's an intelligence officer. I mean, it gets really manipulative and controlling of their entire life. They manipulate their business. They manipulate their finances. I mean, these are the deepening levels that first you're going to have your phone stuff happen and your mail stuff happen. Then you might have a black helicopter, you know, and it's going to increase. And you're going to have deepening levels the more involved they get with you, down to outright manipulation of your day-to-day life. It gets that bad.
What do you think, Randy? Oh, Randy? Oh, did I lose you? That was kind of strange. It got kind of quiet there for a second. I don't know. Phones are kind of strange. It's been a weird, weird couple of weeks lately. You know, too, that's something else I was just thinking about when, Miranda, you need to send me, when you did that, when you were doing them lectures, you did it audio, visually, I mean, did you tape them? Do you want to send me those, Miranda? I'll put them on
a website. Oh, okay, well, I'll send you some stuff.
No, I'll put them on a website, girl, it's always good information out there.
Huh.
Right quick, too, what we got? Randy, one more time, tell them where to find a book, how to get in touch with y'all one more time, because I know we're getting short on time, and I want to keep it fresh in their mind.
Huh? Randy, I can barely hear you.
I think we lost him. We must have lost him on the phone line. Doggone it. Dang, that sucks, because we only got about 4 minutes left to go. I don't know, but when you talk to him again, Melinda, because I guess something happened. He must have got dropped, or the lines must have...
Randy, are you there?
I think the line kicked him, or the line...
Oh, well, here, well, I'll go ahead and say that, again, the book title is Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure. It actually has a subtitle, which he didn't give. The subtitle is Deconstructing a Cover-Up of the Extraterrestrial Presence. So again, the whole title, Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure, Deconstructing a Cover-Up of the Extraterrestrial Presence. And it's available through the Booktree Books in San Diego, California, which is 800-700-8733. Again, 800-700-8733. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of it, because I think he's really making a very, very strong statement for clarifying. Because people always say, well, why is there a cover-up, and why is it still going on, and how come the disclosure movement's not getting anywhere? And I think he's really quite brilliantly addressed all that in this book. And I'm thrilled to be a part of it, and for him to tie in these deeper kind of political manipulative aspects of my research. Because on one level, as you're well aware, Joe, the research is everything about alien abduction. It's about the fact that alien abductions are real, that there's this interest. But then when you get into what is this interest and why are they doing it, you get into a deeper understanding of why there's still a cover-up and how the manipulation and the control works. And that's what Randy saw in my research. He said, wait a second, this gives you a deepening understanding of this. And he has articulated it in his book better than I can, that's for sure.
I wish I could write. It would be much easier for me. I tell you what, though, Melinda, when you talk to him, I'm going to get Linda to get in touch with you and him, but I'm going to schedule you all for separate shows. I haven't got to talk to you alone now in, like, the last three times, huh? So we're going to have to get you on where we can just chit-chat. I'm going to have to get Randy on where we can talk, too, so he can get out there and do it. So when you talk to him, let him know, because I'll get Linda to get in touch with y'all and I guess sometime in August, maybe a little closer to when the book's coming out, make it a little easier to keep it in everybody's mind. Because I'm looking forward to reading it myself. I really am. Oh, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, next week, Dr. Lynn Kitai. I got to remember to call her Dr. Lynn. She gets mad at me when I don't call her Dr. Lynn. She gets on my butt, too, Melinda. she told me, she goes...
She's terrific. I know her, and she's fantastic.
She tells me last night, she goes, you know, Joe, I didn't go to medical school for all them years not to use my title.
There you go.
Well, I got a bad habit of, you know, calling people by their first name and being very informal on the show, because most guests, it relaxes and it gets them to, you know, talk. But anyway, again, Melinda, I want to tell you thank you for being on tonight. When you talked to Rand, tell him I said, I don't know what happened with the phone line. But
Sure, I will.
And I'll get Linda to get in touch with y'all so that y'all can get rescheduled on the show sometime, I guess, late August, early September. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're totally and completely out of time, so I want to thank everyone for listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'd also like to join anybody who would like to. We're going to have the virtual, we're going to have the Pow Talk Auditorium open tonight in the ICAR UFO Alien Phenomena Room, so stop by and join us. We'll be continuing the discussion there. On that note, have a good evening.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com